Here's a little something you may remember from the good old days.
I feel so old.
You're old.
You're so old.
I'm so old.
So old.
We're so old.
You're old.
You're old.
These things still work? To ask that at our age, right?
Yeah.
How's this thing work? We ask that all the time, too, in this technology age.
What, the internet?
Yeah. Phone, the hell, glasses, whatever. Senior Moments is back. Brian Sexton, along with the senior writer, John Osier. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Well,
vacation's not over for you.
No.
You've got a couple of days you can get out of town.
As of the listening for this, I'll be in New York and visiting my son on his 21st birthday.
It's exciting.
Get that out of the way, and when I get back Monday, we're ready to go.
That's when it all really kicks
off.
That's right. Except that it's a little different this year, and maybe it's been different the last few years, where rookies have reported a few days early, a week early, and quarterbacks come in on Friday. So that's kind of a different approach to the NFL.
And that's, I mean, it's sort of continued to happen over the past few years where rookies get earlier, quarterbacks have a little bit of time. It's all about getting the players who need to be ready when the bulk of the veterans report. It's about having the rookies ready to at least have some idea of what's going on. A lot of teams spend this week giving the rookies one more run through the playbook before the veterans get there. They've looked at it during the offseason. They've installed everything then. They'll give everything one more look, and then you sort of start reinstalling it next week so they get a third look at things, and you hope, as was when I was in school, it took me three looks to, you know, I had to figure out a concept. So you hope that by the third look, it becomes a little more second nature, and they can carry in the field, and it becomes a little bit more of a learned language.
So a few hours ago, we were talking about that. We were talking about Blake Bortles. We were talking about the heat and the humidity next week for camp and getting ready to go to Boston and all of that stuff. And then the news broke that Dante Fowler Jr. had been arrested on Tuesday night in St. Petersburg for an altercation with a passerby.
And I got an Ozone email about this right afterward, and I think it summed it up best. Come on, man.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm not making light of what happened because it was obviously something that was worth the police being there, an arrest, a mugshot, the whole works. In the big picture, if it was just this, just one incident, I think it would be like, okay, fine. It seems to be something that is a pattern with Dante. It's right before training camp starts. It's truly just one of those where if you look at it and you're in charge of him, meaning coaches, GMs, people who are depending on this guy to produce for you, it's a, are you serious?
Right.
Really? Right now? And it's all the stuff where you say, well, this happened, this happened, just gets cut off and you say, just don't have any more of these, you know, and so that's, I think there's some frustration, but it's, you know, I don't think it's going to cause him to be released. He's going to be on the team. All that stuff, it's not that, but it's enough already.
Well, it's a lack of understanding
right, of
his circumstances. If I'm Dave Caldwell, and Dave is not me. I mean, he is not a reactionary person at
all.
He keeps things at an even keel. But
which you have to do in his position.
Absolutely.
It's good you're not running the team because everybody would be cut.
Absolutely. Well,
but guys like us, right. So
I barely keep you here every week.
Sure.
But my point is that draft the guy, tears the ACL, not his fault, right?
Right.
But I pay you $23 million. I guarantee your whole deal, which means I'm staking myself to you.
You're selling trust.
I am convincing my owner that you're worth this, showing him the love, right? And then he's had just a series of, you know, bumps and bruises off the field since then. And the aggravation level has got to be high right now for a guy whose potential, whose talent is extreme. This is a guy with the kind of athleticism to shut down passing games at key moments of a ball game. And yet, you have to wonder now, John, can he be that guy? Can he grow out of it?
I never say never on guys because human beings have the capacity to overcome things, make people forget about the past, et cetera, et cetera. But until you see it changed, all we have to go on right now with Dante is a penalty-prone guy last year, wasn't as productive sack-wise as the team wanted and has said over and over again, I need to get better on my technique, better fundamental. The thing that was mentioned all last year was Dante needs to be more of a pro. That's something that came out of people's mouths all the time. Everybody heard it. Well, this sort of thing doesn't line up with that.
No.
Now, it doesn't mean that he hasn't been working. It doesn't mean that we're not going to see a different guy on the field next year. None of that means that that's not going to happen, but it's not a good look, and it doesn't bode well, but maybe we're wrong. Maybe all the work's been put in, he's going to be dynamic, and then all this gets forgotten, but it's just not a pattern you want to see, and it doesn't have a good feel to it. And I'm sure from their perspective, I haven't talked to the inner workings yet about this. It's got to be aggravating. And,
it's embarrassing. If it was your son that did that, you'd be embarrassed.
Sure.
And yeah, this is someone who represents them.
Yeah, and at some point, you have to stop saying it's going to stop, and it's got to stop.
I'll tell you, someone whose identity has been identified, has been associated with this franchise for 23 years, it's embarrassing to me personally.
Sure.
I'm going to go to Publix this weekend. You know what I'm going to hear? What's the story with that guy?
Right.
Right? Everyone's going to want to talk about that as opposed to...
what we should be talking about.
Which is, boy, I can't wait to see Fournette in camp. Instead, it's going to be Fowler. Fowler. That's the part that aggravates me. That is the part that probably aggravates a lot of people.
Once it happened, 25 of the next 28 Ozone emails were Dante Fowler.
Which tells you that next week when camp opens, that's going to have to be the prevailing question.
Well, sure.
They're going to bring him in front of the cameras, and he's going to have to say sorry, and it won't happen again. And
again, he'll say the right things. He said all the right things this offseason. So what you hope is that all those right things show up on the field, and that this is a blip. But until you prove it's not a blip, then it's not a blip.
Rookies come in. In fact, they're here. All eyes on Fournette. And my question to you is, a week from camp opening, how productive do you expect him to be?
Yeah, and to be honest, this is a new one for me, Brian, because I'm not a guy in 22, 23 years covering this league. I generally, during training camp, pay relatively little attention to rookies. You know, they're a nice story. They're usually not very good quotes yet. They need to grow up. They're not the storyline. There's high expectations from fans, but realistically covering the league, you might get a little bit out of them. But this is different. This is not that story. This is a guy who he needs to produce. He's at a position where you're supposed to produce. It's not all on him. The line has to get better. Things have to happen around him. But unlike most years where most fans look at a rookie and think, boy, I'm going to see fireworks, this is a year where the team expects fireworks out of a guy. And, to me, running backs depend on their surroundings a lot. But Fournette, as an indicator of this team and this offense, and as a guy who can make things happen once he has been helped, so to speak, he needs to be an 1150, 1200-yard guy, double touchdown guy. If he's not that, then I don't think the team is where they want to be.
What if Chris Ivory contributes at a level that some people around here are whispering he might?
Apparently
he's had a tremendous offseason.
It would be great if Chris Ivory added to those 1,200 yards and,
You could have two hammers.
Double digit touch. Yeah.
If both of these guys, if Ivory is healthy.
Chris Ivory is one of the most overlooked players of the offseason among observers and fans, because you're exactly right. He is a guy who you don't want Fournette having every carry. But if he can be a hammer, if he can be productive, and then Fournette's the guy who goes for 50 once the defense is worn down.
I get it. I know five is the real storyline. So don't think for a minute I'm disagreeing with that. But I look at 27 Fournette, and I think his impact could be huge if they can control the line of scrimmage, manageable down a distance, so that Bortles isn't having to take too many shots down the field, and keeping that defense protected on the sidelines as much as possible so that they are healthy, rested, ready to go. I don't want to overplay that hand, but boy, I tell you what, if Fournette comes in and has the kind of impact you're talking about, let's throw Ivory in there too. It gives you the chance to be really, really productive in the running game like the Jaguars have been at various times.
Right.
98, 99, 2005, 6, 7, times where they were competitive teams.
We've both used the phrase in talking about this season, they need to run when they want to run. And you said it on Jaguars.com Live earlier this week. Doug's used that phrase a lot too. And Doug has talked a lot about, he doesn't really care about numbers, stats, all that stuff. Can he run? Can his offense run when it needs to run? Reflective in that, the Jaguars haven't had double-digit touchdowns rushing, I believe, since 2010. Haven't made the playoffs haven't contended and been a...
They're 8-5 December 18th, right. 2010.
Haven't with been the a relevant team in December since they did that.
Yep.
That's a big stat around the league. Running touchdowns matters to a lot of teams as much as overall rushing yards, because it's indicative of, hey, if I'm at the 4-yard line, I'm running it in. If I'm at the 1, I can do it when I want to. If you can do it there, you can also probably do it in 4 minutes. Right. You can do it when you need to do it. They've had fewer rushing touchdowns than their opponent every year since that. That needs a turn. And you know me, I don't spend a whole lot of time just breaking down statistics. They're great chart reading. They're not always great read reading. But rushing touchdowns is something that you want to see that number a lot closer to 1 per game, at least, than you have in recent years. You know, any more than 1 per game is phenomenally these days. But what were Coughlin's first words to Fournette? Hey, you're here to score touchdowns.
Yeah.
You know, or something along those lines. That's the thing that's going to be worth watching.
So we'll save the Bortles talk because we talked about him all
needs to be better. And, guess what?
Right. Needs to be right. Better. And we'll see next week. So let me ask you, and I know you're very well planned with the stories that you're going to write. I mean, you have an
idea. I have no idea what I'm doing even tomorrow.
Baloney. For people who are listening, that is crap.
I can barely get out of my own
way. You know the things.
Sure.
Right. So here's the thing. There's lots of known storylines. Leonard Fournette, left tackle, Calais Campbell. What story are you interested to write? I mean, not the ones that you have to write,
sure,
because it's obvious news, but what story are you interested to learn more and write?
A lot of them are the obvious one. You know, I want to see, and it won't be a story you can write during training camp, but I want to see if this team can rush the passer when it matters. You know, and I want to see if quarterbacks are a little bit nervous on third down for a change. And that's sort of been the thing. It's so hard to put a finger on it, but when you watch this defense last year, everybody talked about, well, it's top six in the league. Well, but scoring was down. All that stuff is great, but if you play great defense on first and second down in this league, and on 3rd and 7, the opposing quarterback can either stand in the pocket calmly or make one move and stand in the pocket calmly, and he's not looking around, then you're not a good defense. You have to be able to close the door, and this team hasn't closed the door in that situation in too long. So is that there anywhere? Does Calais Campbell give you that? Does the combination of Calais and Malik, I don't know, it's hard to write that story in training camp.
Sure.
But I think that's, beyond anything else, what you hear about this team is, well, the defense is going to be good enough where if they just get a little bit of offense, this defense can carry them. Well, the defense can't carry you unless it's getting pressure and turnovers. Turnovers come usually from disruption up front. Disruption up front usually comes in situations where the defense knows it can pin its ears back and go. Well, it hasn't been good in that situation yet. So for all the other moves they made, if you can't take advantage of the opportunities you create for yourself defensively, which is impact, slam the door, pass rush, then it's all for naught. So where does that come from? I'm not sure yet.
Story that I want to tell, Paul Posluszny in the twilight of his career now, right? 32-year-old linebacker, much closer to the end, even though he's in tremendous shape.
Sure.
Taking one for the team, never been on a winning team. This may be his best chance. Moving positions.
Yep.
This may be his best chance to have a team that at least is in the storyline when Thanksgiving rolls around.
And,
And he's been so candid,
right,
about the move this year, where normally he is team, not saying he's not team, but he's giving you a glimpse inside his thought process with the hesitation at that news conference where he talked about
right.
it. And so I'm anxious to tell that story this year. I think it's going to be fascinating.
But I think a lot of that, Brian, is I think the reason it made him nervous was he is such a preparation junkie, if you will. And he knows, a middle linebacker, he knows walking onto that field, even the practice field, I know exactly what I'm doing with this. And I know what I know what work I have to put in to play at the level I need to play at. He doesn't really know that with strong side.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of, am I going to be prepared enough to do this? But my sense is having that attitude will get him over the hump.
Get him where he needs to be.
And get him where he needs to be. But on that note, and it sort of sets up where this team is. I can remember, I think it was 2 years ago, when the Jaguars sort of wiggled their way back into some sort of close to contention midseason. The rest of the division was bad.
We could at least talk about what if.
Yeah. And the Jaguars won, I want to say they won a couple of games in a row, and they had, and they were sort of back in it. I remember talking to Paul after one of the games, and I sort of mentioned Paul because he's been around the longest, has mattered on the team longer than most people in the locker room. The giddiness after the game of, we just won a game that feels sort of big. You know, and I'm paraphrasing him, but the excitement, the thought of how much that mattered, you miss covering stuff like that. And if this team can get back to where they're playing meaningful stuff in November, and we're walking into that locker room with guys talking about, hey, if we win next week, .. been too long.
And with Poslesny, I think that'll be a great story.
It would be terrific.
You're going to New York, as you said. When you go to New York, everybody tells you where to go, where to eat. So I'm going to give you a place to go get dessert. Ready? Right. Serendipity.
I thought you say Baskin-Robbins.
No.
Okay.
No, you can do that here. Serendipity.
All right.
63rd and 3rd on the Upper East Side.
All right.
Get yourself one of their peanut butter sundaes. It comes in a bowl bigger than the inside of that helmet right there.
Right.
And it's phenomenal.
And if I forget, I'll just listen to the podcast.
63rd and 3rd, Serendipity. Right. Once saw Barbara Walters in there eating that very peanut butter sundae.
Let me pick up that name you just dropped.
I'm not a big fan necessarily, but I'm just telling you, it's a place that people know.
Yeah.
Serendipity.
I will look it up.
Right? Did Joe tell you a place? Oh, he's from Phil.
He's from Phil.
Get a cheesesteak.
Yeah. All right. Cool. See you next week.
All right, buddy.
Looking forward to it.
You too.
That'll do it for this edition of Senior Moments. See you next week.